money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Good morning, you beautiful bunch of Fockers, and welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. It is Thursday, January 18th. We are here live. We're hoping technology holds out today. We are still in a kind of a weather apocalypse out here in Oregon. Our internet, our regular fiber internet here in the studio has been out for several days. I have no idea when we might get that back. We are running on a Starlink system with another Starlink as a backup. So we'll see how all that works out. I am also testing another broadcast system on my end with no mixing board. So this was the ultimate goal, to get down to the point where we could do the show without a board. You do the show either just from a laptop alone or even from an iPad, which will be the next step once I get this laptop system figured out with no other audio equipment involved. I'll start working on an iPad version. Our software is coming along nicely. We are hoping to start beta testing that by the end of this month. So we'll see how the technology holds out today. Yesterday we did have some issues. Not really sure what happened yesterday. I wasn't able to figure it out, but we'll see how things go today. We've got some calls already, so I'll find out. That's the next step. I know you can hear me right now. I'm just wondering if the phones are going to work or not. We will check that out here in just a couple minutes. Today is a free-for-all. We've only got an hour. We are going to try to do rolling tow in the next hour as well. Pick up the phone and join me, 319-527-6791, or hit the call button on your app, and you will be in here. We can talk about anything you want today. I do have a couple topics that I want to talk about, and then we'll get to your calls. The first one I want to talk about, we've been talking about this topic a lot, actually two topics, and it's time to start looking at these together. There are a lot of groups out there right now that are pushing for more and more broker transparency. They want the brokers to be forced to show you rates, and I'm totally against that. I think our system right now is just fine, doesn't need any working on. At the same time, some of those same groups that are fighting for broker transparency are also fighting for the PRO Act. And the PRO Act in trucking is basically AB 5 at a federal level. AB 5 in California is already law, and now they're pushing for it at a federal level. What AB 5 means in trucking is that the PRO Act, just like AB 5, would make it illegal to lease to a carrier if you owned a truck. The ABC test is what they're pushing for. Currently, we use the 21-question test from the IRS to determine if somebody is an independent contractor or not. I will say in general that that test allows almost anybody to be an independent contractor as long as they own some equipment. That seems to be the big factor. The company hiring the independent contractor has always been allowed to exert quite a bit of control over the business and still call them independent contractors. That's been the government's ruling for the last 40 years I've been in this industry. If you own or even rent or lease the equipment, you have a very good chance in the IRS 21-question test of being determined to be an independent contractor. And that system has worked really well for 40-some years. I don't know why we need to change it. A lot of people will point to the lease purchase programs and say, well, those are illegal. They're really not. The IRS says, look, they at this moment, they control that equipment. They may not own it, but they have a contract to lease it or rent it, and that's enough. They are bringing their own equipment, and for the most part, that's been the major criteria. Now, that's the IRS. Now the Department of Labor wants to rewrite those rules. The Trump era rules were very favorable towards using independent contractors. The Biden administration rules that the Department of Labor is pushing right now would make it almost the opposite, that the government could argue many businesses would not be legal anymore under this ruling. I'm not even sure I really understand the big issue here. The more I think about this, the less I understand it. I'm trying to determine how they're figuring out that somebody is an independent contractor and not just an independent business. I don't even really understand that. If I go into business, nobody hires me. I just decide that I'm going to go into business and then I find somebody to contract with. I don't know how we distinguish between I just own an independent business or I'm an independent contractor. What they're trying to do, though, is stop one business from contracting with another business. I think what will end up happening here is businesses will only be allowed to interact with the end user, the person paying for the services. So for example, to use something other than trucking, if I'm a drywall installer, I can go contract with Home Depot, and Home Depot then finds work for me. Somebody comes in, needs a room drywalled or painted or whatever, they can buy that service through the Home Depot, and that goes for carpeting, windows, doors, siding, painting, just about every type of home service you can go contract through, like Lowe's and Home Depot. They use independent contractors. I don't understand why that's a problem, but it is. Now, in trucking, it seems like the solution is go get your own authority and become a carrier. Now, if I'm a one-truck carrier and I decide to lease exclusively to C.H. Robinson as a brokerage, and I don't have to sign a contract saying that, I can just choose to only get my loads through C.H. Robinson. But I'm wondering if they're even going to crack down on that, because I don't see the difference. I don't see the difference between saying I'm an independent contractor and leasing to Landstar, the trucking company, or I go get my own authority and get all my work through Landstar, the brokerage. I don't understand the difference. So I'm afraid that at some point they may even try to crack down on that. So if you look at these two issues together, it really starts to become interesting. If we can't lease to a carrier, and these groups that don't want us to be able to lease to a carrier are also fighting brokers on all kinds of issues, what are they thinking? If we take the hundreds of thousands of owner-operators that are currently leased to carriers, and their only way to stay in business is to get their own authority, what's going to happen to the brokerage world? It's going to explode. We're going to have so many new brokers in the industry. How could we not? These hundreds of thousands of owner-operators can't get their own freight. Some might. Some will get some of their own freight directly from shippers, but that's not easy. It's why brokers exist. So if the Pro Act goes through and you can't lease to a carrier anymore, the biggest winners are the brokers, the way I see it. I don't see any other way that this is going to work. Now, I've been looking at this hard for several years because we've been dealing with both of these issues for quite a while now. I've been getting prepared. I can see a huge advantage for where we're sitting right now. This certainly isn't going to hurt my bottom line. We have put everything in place to help that transition from leased owner-operator to getting your own authority. We are going to make it as easy as a franchise program. You just turn the key and you're in business. We have all the pieces all put together to take a leased owner-operator, get them their own authority, an entire package the business is set up for you just like a franchise. The difference is, unlike a franchise where you don't get to make any choices, you get to make all the choices here. We've put the package together. You can choose to use the whole package the way it is. It's nice and simple, but you can go do anything you want. There's no contract here. There's no, we get to decide who you're going to use for your BOC3 or none of that. We just put a package together and say, here's a really great way to run this business with your own authority, and everything's been done for you, but you get to decide. That's what we're working on. And if this stuff goes through, I imagine we could be pretty busy with the program like this. I don't like it. I wish it wasn't happening. But if it's going to happen, I'm going to make sure we're in a good position to take advantage of it. And I'll be able to help other people take advantage of this as well. You know, there's Overdrive just did a good article. I posted it. I didn't get it up on the tribes yet. I'll get that done here in a little bit. About broker margins and really good data on this. The data actually comes from DAT. One of their analysts over there did a kind of a deep dive into this and looked at it from multiple different data sets. And basically the same thing we've been saying for years and years and years is that broker margins run right around 15%. They have for as long as I can remember. And the only way I see that changing is if the PRO Act manages to go through. So just to give you some numbers, flatbed brokers came out with the highest average margin of more than 15%. Reefer at almost 14% and dry van at 13%. So flatbed was 15.1, right there at 15%. Refrigerated was 13.8 and dry van, the lowest margins of all, right at 13%. So if you take the average of all of them, it's 13.5% margins. Unloads. That is normal. It's consistent. It's been that way for decades, and it really doesn't change much. The percentages go up maybe a point or two or down a point or two, but this is consistent. See, the free market works. The free market does not allow any business to just really create much bigger margins than anybody else in the industry. It doesn't work. It doesn't allow any industry to get margins that are too big. So I don't know what the end game is to force all this broker transparency. In fact, I would predict that if they force broker transparency, the rates are going to go down. There's no good to come from this. So I'm just shocked that we have so many groups in trucking and so many individual owner operators that I've talked to that really believe both of these things should happen. We should have more broker transparency. They should be forced to show us their rates, and we should not be allowed to lease to carriers. That would make for a very interesting trucking industry. Like I said, we're ready. We'll make this work either way. All right, I had some other stuff. We're going to get to some phone calls. I want to make sure I don't run out of time today. We've only got an hour, and then we'll head on into Rolling Toe. So jump in and join us, 319-527-6791. Let's go to North Dakota. Al, welcome to the program.
Hello, Gavin. How you doing?
Hey there.
Station or what?
Boy, you wouldn't even be able to ice fish here unless you had a pretty serious engine-powered auger. You're just not getting through this ice.
No, okay. Anyway, my problem is I had cancer about 12 years ago. They say I'm cancer-free now, but I don't let them do any more of them tests where they shoot stuff in the, you know, radioactive stuff. I just don't do it no more.
Okay.
But my ferritin levels are way too high. My iron is good. Everything's good except my ferritin. My ferritin is over 1,200.
So what are the doctors telling you right now?
See a hematologist. That's all they know. That's all they're telling me.
Oh, so you're the doctors that are treating you are telling you they don't know what to do. They just want to refer you out
right
to hematologist.
Right. Yeah, they don't know what to do. Don't have a clue.
When was the first time they diagnosed this?
About a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years at the most.
And are you having any symptoms?
No. I feel good. I go trucking every day. I'm 73 years old. I run coast to coast, water to water, and I feel good.
Yeah, so I don't know that I would do a whole lot with this ferritin. If you wanted to do something, it would require more extensive blood testing.
Right.
One of the things you can always do, and just to see how it would affect, because again, we're talking about the difference between high iron and high ferritin, two different things. You did claim you have normal iron, right?
Right, right. But I used to be real low in iron. So then they gave me infusions of iron, and I suppose I had about six of them, but now all of a sudden my iron's good, but my ferritin is just way too high.
So tell me about your diet.
Oh, I eat whatever I want.
How often do you listen to the show?
Well, I used to listen to it all the time when you were on the radio, but I just finally figured out how to do it on my phone.
So in all the time listening to me, every time I'm talking to somebody about health and I ask them what their diet is and they tell me, well, I eat whatever, or the standard American diet, what's my answer every time?
I'm not supposed to do that, but I understand.
Well, hold on. I don't ever say you're not supposed to do that. I don't care what people eat. I don't try to tell people what to eat. My answer is, if you're going to eat the standard American diet, don't call me. I have no answers for anybody who isn't willing to make the big change in their diet, because I don't know what's going to work. I don't see anything that works. If you eat the standard American diet, you're going to be sick. Everybody I know that eats the standard American diet is sick. They're not healthy. And they will fight things like this. Cancers, autoimmune conditions, metabolic conditions. They go hand in hand with the standard American diet. And I tell people, if you're going to eat the standard American diet, you might as well just go to the standard American doctors and deal with the standard American drugs and the standard American diseases. All sad. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. And I went to a homeopathic doctor. The doctor you said we were supposed to go to. I went to one just down the road from you, a little bit further, a little bit east, in a nice new building. And he put me on that diet, the keto diet, I believe. But I lost so much weight that I couldn't do that. That didn't work.
So what was the functional medicine doctor's answer for keto caused you to lose too much weight? What was his solution?
He didn't have one. He just said go back to eating what you were eating before because you cannot afford to lose any more weight.
Boy, that
I'll come back pretty good, you know, according to him, what he said.
Well, I can't imagine a functional medicine doctor just giving up and saying, go back to the standard American diet. That's a really bad functional medicine doctor. Maybe you should try again. I can tell you exactly what you're going to get with a standard doctor. And if you're going to eat the diet, then just stick with them and take their advice. Because I don't have any advice for you if you keep eating the way you're going to eat.
Yeah. I can't lose no more weight. I've lost too much already. I'm only 125 pounds now since the radiation.
I lost you. I think we lost your phone signal. You're back now. Say that again.
I said I'm only 125 pounds now, so I need to. If I could gain weight, I would, but I haven't gained any in 5 years. And I don't know, I eat a lot of fish.
Maybe we can recover that line. I'm going to take another call. Morgan, if you could check with Al and see if we can get that line a little more stable, and I'll try to come back to him. Let's go to Wisconsin. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind today? Hey, I just want to let everybody know, I'm not sure what's going on with our phone system, but we just lost that call and some others. So we've got open lines right now, 319-527-6791. It is Destination Health All Day. Jump in and join me. No, it's not Destination. What am I thinking? That was yesterday. It's a free-for-all today. You can talk about anything you want. Jump in and join us. All right, Jeff, we're looking at an oil sample, correct?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, this is the truck that I had you look at the ECM report last Friday.
Got it. All right. So you're looking at buying this truck, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. We've got a DD15. What year is this?
2019.
We've got 625,000 miles on the engine and about 17,000 on this oil sample. And I would say that this is a very, very clean truck, tuned and running well. I can't see a single problem with this.
Okay. So that,
now,
that
iron might be a tad high. I don't get too concerned with iron these days. There are more and more people running catalyst. I don't know if this truck was running catalyst or not, but that's one of the ways we see the iron go up. But even in general, higher iron numbers don't seem to correlate to any problems on these newer engines.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
And that's not a really high number. I mean, it's higher than what I would expect. But here's the other thing. I'm not really seeing any other wear metals. So this doesn't really concern me at all. If there was some sort of an issue with the oil that was causing this, we would see it across the board. A lot of your wear metals are zero, really low. The copper is nothing to worry about because your lead is zero. So I don't see a problem with this at all.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was just wondering because, so my last truck had an ISX in it, but I was using catalyst in that too, but that started, you know, that was getting into the 50s and 60s parts per million on the iron there, and I was using oil like crazy, but so I just kind of wanted to.
If you are concerned about oil consumption and you can get, if you're allowed to take this truck to a shop or have somebody go out there, you could do a manometer test, which tests crankcase pressure, which tells us the condition of the rings and the liners, but I don't think it's necessary. We just don't see these engines use oil, and this is not enough wear to worry about.
Okay. Well, good. Good deal, because it's a nice truck, nice and clean, and I'll be smoking it or nothing, and it's they're hard to find like that.
It is, and this is... This oil sample tells me that this engine is tuned well and it's running well, and that's usually a pretty good sign when it comes to emissions.
Good deal. Good deal. Guess that's all the questions I got for you.
All right. Good stuff. I don't know what's going on with phone calls today. I don't know if it's an issue with our phone system, if people just aren't calling. We had a couple calls. We lost a couple, and now the board is just empty. So if you want to jump in and join me, 319-527-6791. We are continuing on with our winter apocalypse here in Oregon. I have never seen anything quite like what we're dealing with right now. So last Friday it started. We started getting snow last Friday. Then we got crazy high winds, so we had big drifts. It wasn't even enough to worry about like shoveling your driveway, because most of my front driveway was completely bare. My back driveway was bare, except I had like a 4-foot snowdrift running right down the middle of the driveway. We have these weird wind conditions in the back driveway there, and it drifts like crazy. But it wasn't really affecting me getting in and out of the driveway, and we had a lot going on, so I didn't shovel or get out there with the snowblower. Since Friday, we have gotten lots of precipitation in every form that it could come out of the sky. We've had snow, we've had sleet, we've had freezing rain, and we've had rain since Friday, and it's gone back and forth. We've gone from single-digit temperatures and crazy high winds. Now we're up in the high 20s. We got up into the mid-30s yesterday, and everything started to thaw. They finally came by in our neighborhood and plowed the streets. I wish they wouldn't have. They actually made things worse, because now I am looking at cars that are just buried on the street. People's driveways are blocked, and the stuff out at the end of the driveway is solid ice. I couldn't break through it with a dirt shovel, much less a snow shovel. It's so hard. It's a nice clearance, and I put chains on it, so I was able to kind of make a path in and out of the driveway, and so we can get out with the Range Rover does really good in this stuff, but it doesn't have the kind of ground clearance. So we can get both of our vehicles out. I made sure of that this morning. But I'm looking at a lot of people that probably could not get out of their driveway if they had to. And the snow is still coming down. Now it is snow. We probably have, if I had to guess, it's hard to figure right now. I would guess that we've got 10 inches on the ground in most places. But when you walk on it, you walk on top of it, and you don't even leave a mark. That's how frozen solid it is. And now we're getting snow on top of that. I haven't been out to the farm for 36 hours, so I don't know what's going on out there, but I'm going to have to try to get out there this afternoon. It's been a little crazy. I imagine that we're going to see the effects of this in the supply chain. We're not getting deliveries. Yesterday, we weren't able to get to the warehouse at all. I doubt that anybody's going into the warehouse today. We might try to get down there a little bit later, but it's still looking pretty crazy here weather-wise. All right, let's get to some phone calls. They're starting to come in. Keep dialing. We've got another 30 minutes. It is a free-for-all, 319-527-6791. Let's head north of the border. Steve, what's on your mind this morning?
Kevin, thanks for taking my call. I'm starting a carnivore diet, 6 years old, and I was in a routine. I bought a small farm 30 years ago, and it's just got bigger and bigger. And I had 20-pound wind every time the summer came because I was working and everything was fine. And now that I've retired, gotten older, the weight just doesn't come off, so I started carnivore. And started on December 11th, and I'm just not sure if I'm on the right track or not.
Well, what are your results so far?
Well, basically, just checking on my phone, I didn't know water weight comes off quickly, apparently. So the first month, let's just check here. December 11th, I was 230. on the 30th of 2018, and I basically stalled there now for the last 2 weeks.
So say that again. Your phone is doing something weird. It's clipping the beginning and end of every sentence, and I'm having a hard time. What is your current weight now that you're stalled at?
I'm at 14. Started at 230 on December 11th.
And you're at 214?
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. I mean, and stalls aren't unusual. In fact, in the beginning, for some reason, a stall seems to be very, very common. There's a couple things we can try to get past the stall, or sometimes we just tell people to wait it out and it works and we're not sure why. One of the things we see cause a stall on a keto or carnivore diet is digestive issues. If you're not digesting your fat properly, if your stomach acid's weak, if we have digestive issues, that can cause a stall. It's why we have so many different digestive kits and why we talk about it so much, because we immediately identified that that was one of the biggest reasons we would see people stall. And I've also seen people stall. Like I said, I just tell them, just wait it out and let's see what happens. And all of a sudden, the weight starts coming off again. Most of the time, we can't even explain it. The other thing that can do it is stress. And the stress seems to affect people that have been doing this for years and years, more so than people in the beginning. Usually, if stress is going to be a problem, you will have a hard time getting into ketosis at all or losing that weight initially. So I'm thinking that yours may just be one of those that we're not going to be able to figure out. We just have to wait it out, or it is digestive. How do you feel like your digestion is working?
Well, in the beginning, like the fourth or fifth day, I had bouts of diarrhea, and then I went into nothing. I mean, no movements at all, significantly for time at all. And then it started in the hit and miss ever since. So I feel like, if there's ever a toilet paper shortage, I won't have a problem.
So, and that's fairly common in carnivore. What I would tell you is to increase both your water and your salt intake. That usually takes care
okay.
of it. And I would also say that that's probably why we're seeing this stall, because your digestion is kind of stalled.
So how do I know if I'm getting enough fat?
Eat more and see if things get better. That's the best way I know of to find that upper limit of fat. For me, one of the things that I'll do if I've got a really busy day and I don't want to worry about food, 2 cups of NDK coffee in the morning, which is like a total of 8 tablespoons of fat. But hold on a second. Hold on.
Okay.
I just had to stop the broadcast. I can't talk. Well, I did. I totally forgot with everything going on. Remember, Lisa, I did mention, and I'm not blaming anybody else. It doesn't have to be anybody's fault. Whatever the guest number is, the only number you can call in on. The guest number on here is the only number we have. I'm sorry. All right. We're dealing with a user error again. I had a guest scheduled for today, and with everything going on this week with the weather, I forgot to inform the team about it. So we're trying to get them in. We can just continue on with this, though. Steve, go ahead. Say that again.
No, I was just concerned about how do I know if I'm getting enough fat, and you mentioned about coffee. I'm not a coffee drinker. I don't drink tea or coffee. Never have.
Okay, that's fine. We don't need to do it in coffee or liquid, but just add more fat. I mean, there are times where I will eat straight butter. It will kill your appetite. It gives you energy. If the only way I know to know whether we're getting enough fat, other than me telling you, you've got to weigh your food and tell me exactly how much you're eating of this and take a picture so I can see how fatty that cut of meat was. it's hard to measure the amount of fat that we're eating. And I don't want people to start, you know, obsessing over measuring and weighing food. Just add more fat. Put more butter on everything. Get fattier cuts of meat. You know, any place you can add fat to your diet, go ahead and add it and see if you feel better. And many times the fat is for me, and there seems to be a little bit of a difference with some people. Some people are more satiated with protein. That kind of kills their appetite. Some people are more satiated with fat. For me, it's fat. If I eat too much lean protein, I'm hungry all the time, and I just keep eating. Not that I gain any weight, because as long as I keep eating lean protein, I don't really gain any weight, but I'm hungry all the time. When I start adding more fat to that protein, then my appetite, I can go a day easily without eating. It just doesn't bother me at all. So the only way I know to know whether it's enough fat is just keep adding more and see what the results are.
Okay. All right. And if I eat too much, what's the result of that?
Nausea. You'll actually start to feel a little nauseous if you're eating too much fat. You won't be able to digest it, so you'll see issues of poor fat digestion, which are things like very light-colored or even gray stools, an oil slick in the toilet bowl. Those kind of things will tell you you're eating more fat than your body can digest.
All right.
So I would add lots of salt and water and add more fat, and then let's see where this goes.
All right. Appreciate your comments. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. All right. We are going to get our guest on here. I see it. That call's being screened right now. So we are going to bring the guest on. I will probably get back to some calls. It's a little crazy here this morning. That's all I can say. Yes, I screwed this up. This was user error again on my part. It's been kind of a crazy week. But with all that being said, we are bringing on our guest. It is the founder of Nastic, David Owen. David, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's good to be back. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard what was going on this morning, but I kind of failed to tell the team of our plans today. You and I kind of made these plans on our own. This is why they don't give me the keys to anything.
Well, I don't even want to go. We've survived a tornado and a blizzard the last 2-3 weeks. And down here, we got about 8 inches of snow, and then it iced over, and it hadn't been above 22 degrees for about 5 days. So we didn't have water in our building number 2 until about 10 minutes ago, and I've got a New Energy Survival training class up there tomorrow.
Oh, boy. Are you sure you're not in Oregon? Because you just described our weather.
Well, no, but y'all can take care of that kind of thing in about a couple of hours. It takes us a couple of weeks, and sometimes longer than that.
You'd be a little surprised. Where we are, we have really, really mild winters. People don't realize we don't get this kind of weather. We were down in low single digits, so I've got a burst pipe out at the farm I got to go deal with. I was running back and forth since last Friday between the two properties. We're either out of water, out of power. Things were freezing. We had 60 to 80 mile an hour winds here in the gorge with snow. And we've probably got 10 plus inches of stuff on the ground that is now just frozen solid, and you walk on top of it and you don't even leave a mark.
Wow. And that's the way it is here. And it's supposed to, we've got another system. The Weather Channel says it's going to hit us tonight, tomorrow, but I'm betting the don'ts. I think it's going to miss us and go just slightly north of us. But everybody else goes bonkers here when this happens. So can't find a roll of toilet paper anywhere, and there's no bread in the shelves. And anyhow,
yeah.
But we're other than that, we're doing just fine.
Well, good. It sounds like we're both dealing with the same thing, but we're both here at work, and we'll just do the best we can.
Well, I'm thrilled that we didn't have to cancel the thing, because we were going to have to make a decision in the next couple of hours to call the ones that are still coming. We've had a lot of cancellations. This is going to be a pretty small class, but we've still got about 20 or 22 that are mostly from the South. Most of our guys in Minneapolis and Indiana who are going to catch this second round. They've canceled, I believe. But anyhow, we're going to do it. If there's only eight of them, we'll do it. They'll get the same thing they'd get if there were 75 in there. So
that's right. Maybe even better.
I talked to one of your people today, Dale Williams.
Yeah.
Called me.
Yeah.
And he's. I got some good feedback. I hope he got some good feedback. I'm sending him some stuff, and we'll be talking. But he's like everybody else. Everybody else is, and he's in Illinois. He's south of Springfield. I think it's Springfield, Illinois. And he's having the worst time finding good people to drive his trucks. And that's true for everybody, particularly in a state like Illinois, where what is the minimum wage in Illinois these days? About $22?
I can't remember. You may or may not remember this, because you and I talked about so many things over the last several months, especially when I was down there together. I actually talked about Dale with you. He's in our group coaching program, and we went through, I tore his business apart, inside and out, upside down, every way I could look at it. I can't find anything they're doing wrong. Really, I was very impressed. Family-run business, been around forever, had a lot of trucks at one point. I was frustrated, because I thought, what am I missing here? I feel like I'm missing something. And then he made the statement that started to make more sense. He said there were some bigger companies around him that does exactly what they do, and they've lost even more drivers than he had. And he said, everybody here is dealing with this. And I said, I just can't find anything you're doing wrong. And they were running such a good business. They're paying a good wage. Drivers are home every night. I mean, this is an operation where if I didn't know better, I would have looked at that and said, you should have zero driver turnover and you should have a waiting list.
Exactly. And going back, I think he's second or third generation at that company. So it's not like they don't know what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. It's just that, in today's world, the old models aren't going to work when we have such a downturn. I hate the term, it's trite now, perfect storm. When you've got the things lined up exactly like they are. I told him, halfway kidding, but only halfway, told him my first advice would be for him to get the hell out of Illinois and come south.
I would agree with that. and that sounds drastic, but sometimes it's not. I mean, I moved my trucking business twice for reasons like that, and both times it worked out better for me. But that, I get it. That's a big decision. This is a family business, like you said, third generation. Here's something else. A lot of people I'm dealing with right now are struggling because they have never seen a downturn in their business. They don't know how to handle it. They've never been through one. We haven't had one in so long. But this is a family that has made it through multiple downturns. They know how to do this. That's why I was so shocked and frustrated when I was trying to work with him, because everything I thought of, they had already tried. They had already thought of all that stuff. They were, like I said, running a really good business, and it's shocking how fast this happened and how many drivers they lost and how that whole industry in that area is suffering the same thing.
Well, you're right. And unfortunately, with stuff like AB5 and mandatory pre-CDL training, and almost seems like every issue that comes to the plate now, I don't even want to go to the cost of equipment or the interest rate or the cost of or cost of money. I'm baffled as to, you know, I tell you who's going to be the heroes once again, and Dale, I think, will be one of them. But at the end of the day, when it turns around, I think he'll be driving two or three trucks, and he'll be driving one of them.
I think you're right, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk with you about the little bit of time we have left today. We have another show that comes up at the top of the hour. But you and I have been talking about a lot of things. We've got some pretty exciting stuff going on in the background. Yeah, and my open today was about two of the big issues I'm watching, AB5 type laws, the PRO Act at the federal level, which will create an AB5-like environment across the entire country, and the broker transparency issue. They're being pushed by the same groups, and I'm just wondering if they've stepped back to say, if we push this PRO Act like they're doing, these groups, trucking groups, they don't want it to be okay to lease to a carrier. That model has worked just fine for decades. I don't see why we would mess with it. It's another option. It seems to work great in my book. One way or another, we'll figure it out. If they push the PRO Act, do they not see the fact that the biggest beneficiary of this is going to be the broker industry?
I don't think they see anything. I think they take advice from the wrong people. They don't. Everything they've tried, Kevin, over the last 23 years, as long as FMCSC has been around, everything that they've come out with always preambles, this is going to be really hard for small carriers and owner-operators.
Yeah.
And then they follow it, we're sorry about the unintended consequences, and then they got to go right on with their nonsense. And the truth of the matter, half of it has no reason for being tried at all, except some congressman or somebody inside the Beltway in Washington thinks they know something about trucking and safety. And the truth of the matter is, they don't have a clue. So I don't know that we're ever, and the starting point, really, if you get right down to it, everybody says, agrees, I think, the starting point's tort reform. Until we get some semblance of fairness and on the value of your human life, and going back to the good old days where you actually looked at skid marks and actually looked to see who was at fault before you put something in front of a jury where they're going to give a $80 million verdict. We've got a carrier right now that's probably going to have to file Chapter 11, go take personal bankruptcy. And he's been his safety numbers are immaculate. His turnover rate's immaculate. His operating ratio is wonderful. He's everything about him is good. And he had a horrible accident about two years ago. And it was, in his opinion, of course, I can understand plaintiff. His driver had a heart attack, stroke, seizure, or some kind of event, and lost control of the truck. It went across the median and hit another truck and killed the driver of an SUV. Horrible. Everything burst into flames. It was just a horrible, horrible accident. And he says, the owner says, you know, we understand that that's a wrongful death. That guy should not have died, and it's not his fault that he died. But I don't know how it's our fault either. There was no negligence involved.
Correct.
It's a horrible
right.
thing. But the jury started out at $34
million. Oh.
And they finally got it down to $5 million, but he's going to have to bankrupt at $5 million. And And all they're doing is they're capping down to the damn billboard ambulance chasers out there.
Yep.
The lawyer involved is going to get a couple of million, and ain't no telling. I don't want to say that. Ain't no telling what the rest of the people in the food chain are going to get. But it's just one of those sad stories that was, in my opinion, I feel sorry for everybody. But the deal is an act of God.
Yeah, bad things are going to happen in our world. They just do. We can't insure against everything. But let's think about this. I'm a big believer in giving large sums of money to people that have never had large sums of money never ends well. We think that, oh, what a wonderful thing. This guy's got, he's going to get all this money, or the family, because he's gone. I mean, the family, somebody's going to get a bunch of money over this. That's not a good thing. Now, I am completely for making people whole after this. That's what is supposed to happen. We need to make them whole. The family, it was not their fault. But $34 million goes so far beyond making somebody whole. It's insane. This person would have never earned $34 million at one shot ever. Why do we think we need to give them $34 million?
Well, when FMCSA first came into existence around 1999-2000, about the same time that Warner went on ELDs and Bill Clinton was in the White House, The value of human life in court cases and trucking litigation was like $1.5 million. And today, it you can look it up. It's public knowledge, but the government thinks a human life today is worth like $25 million.
That just makes absolutely no sense. And really, the only beneficiaries of these, I don't see the people getting these big settlements being a beneficiary. The only beneficiaries I see really are the attorneys.
Well, just to take it one step further, in this particular case, the guy that got killed was in one state. The accident was in a second state.
Oh,
and
boy.
The trucking company owner was domiciled in a third state. Now, I know for work comp claims, the person that's filing the workers' comp claim can file in any one of those three locations. Well, the two locations other than his home state have a ceiling on claims of like $1.5 million. And the state that he's suing in has no ceiling.
Of course.
So.
Yeah. What a mess.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Hey, David, in the little bit of time we've got left, we can outline the problems. I think we've done that. We see what's going on in the industry and what could be coming. I'm more excited about some of the things you and I are working on together that could actually make these things better.
Well, baby steps, one step at a time, but it's, we're going to be an overnight success, although we started working on this 35 years ago.
It looks like it's our time.
I've put a label on it. I put a name on it. And quite frankly, just between me and you and your listeners, the AB5 ruling is going to force one guy, one truck owner operators to go get their own authority. And that's what we're talking about helping. We're calling them ROTCs, Remarkable One Truck Companies. And we think if they'll take a little bit of our knowledge and work it into their business plan, and take a little bit of your knowledge and work it into their business plan, and let us do some things and be part of a larger group, we think that we can get their CSA numbers in single digits, their driver turnover in single digits, cut their insurance in half, and get their operating ratios down in the high 70s. Now, that's what I think we can do, and I think you agree with me. Now, the proof's in the pudding, but I'm telling you, we've already got about 4,000 trucks on our program without Kevin Rutherford's second half, which is of tremendous value. So, yeah, I'm excited about it, and I'm not worried about it one iota about it being a better mousetrap, being a better model, and being able to do all those things. We're going to really be able to help one guy, one truck owner operators run under their own authority and get better paying freight, pay less for insurance, and have better safety numbers. And that's what this is about.
Absolutely. And like you said, we've talked about this a lot. You and I really have spent about 35 years getting to this place where we could help people. And it seems like the timing is really good. Look, I'm not for any of these changes. I would rather just see the AB5 stuff go away, let people lease to carriers. I think it's a good model. It gives people another option. But they're not. They're going to push this broker issue, and they seem to be winning. The good news is you and I have got Plan B just sitting there waiting to pull the trigger.
Well, I think that, you know, everything's so geopolitical. Our politics is so upside down and small business unfriendly. The current administration wants everybody to be an employer of somebody's, and they want everybody to be a member of a union. Well, we don't believe in that in the small trucking business. And if we did, there wouldn't be any small trucking.
What
those
right.
guys don't understand is J.B. Hunt started with one truck. Almost all full truckload long-haul carriers start with one truck. You choke the life out of that model, and you're killing the very people that bailed us out during COVID. Our guys are the ones that kept us from having shortages in fuel, medicine, and food. And
that's right.
They're out there every day and risk their lives and their families' health to get stuff done. And this is the thanks we get. I am sick and tired of these clowns in the Beltway saying that they care a whit about competition or small businesses. They don't.
You're right. They don't. Every one of their actions proves that they don't. The interesting thing is that you and I have been here before. This isn't the first time that they've tried to really put small trucking businesses out of business. They've predicted that they're going to go away. I can't count how many times I've heard somebody say in the last 35 years, the owner-operator model's dead. No, it's not. You know, on the other hand, we know the statistics that the vast majority of the freight in this country gets moved by very, very small trucking companies. And that's the way we want to keep it. We don't want this to become a industry of only the giants. You mentioned J.B. Hunt. The biggest one, Swift started with one truck.
Sure he did.
Why would we want to get rid of that model that's really worked so well?
Well, the... It's idiotic, really. And our guys, the one guy, one truck, these are OTC guys, remarkable one truck companies with remarkable one truck business plans. They're the safest drivers in America. And I would like to clarify one thing. When you and I are talking, we're talking about a niche of trucking. We're not talking about Yellow Roadway. We're not talking
Correct.
About FedEx. We're not even talking about Swift, Knight, or Snyder, or anybody else. We're not talking about logistics companies. We're talking
right.
about full truckload, long haul, irregular route, small carriers. And those are the guys that take a load 1,000 miles and get it there in a day and a half and do it safe and better than anybody else. And they're going to continue doing that. When we started, I'm sick and tired of people telling me I can't do something. Well,
yeah.
I'd rather them say, well, you're going to have a hard time doing that. And I understand that. We're going to have a hard time doing this. But
yes, we are.
When Buster and I started NASDAQ, they told us, you can't do that. It's not going to work. There won't be any small trucking companies to talk to in 2 or 3 years. That was 1989, for God's sake.
David, you know how many times when I first came up with the idea of my owner-operator small carrier training program, the CMC, I thought I need to go talk to people in the industry about this. I need to see if this is really viable. Nobody's ever done it. I looked around. There were no training programs like this anywhere. And I said, well, there kind of was yours, but I didn't know it at the time.
When you started, it wasn't. We had
there was nothing. So I asked people. I asked fleet owners. I asked people that I thought knew more about the industry than I did. And unfortunately, it's a good thing I didn't listen to them, because everybody said, are you insane? You think you're going to get an owner-operator to pay $1,000 and come sit through 2 or 3 or 4 days of training? We can't even get them to come to a one-hour safety meeting on Saturday if we bribe them. So I was told over and over and over it's never going to work. I'm glad I didn't listen to them.
I'll never forget the day that I had a good friend. His name was Marshall Brown. I think Marshall's left us now. But he was a really smart guy and a really good guy, and he wrote insurance for Gail Smith in Nashville. And when I got involved with this, when we first started NASTIC, Marshall was my kind of, I bounced everything off of Marshall. And so 1991, we started NASTIC in 89. 1991, we were a year and a half in, and we were still in the bunker, just me and Buster. And I went to Marshall, and I said, Marshall, Buster and I seem to think we can do this drug testing program. He said, oh, my God, Owens. He said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You can't do that. You can't do that. He said, David, I love you like a brother, but run. Don't walk away from that. There's going to be litigation, and, you can't. You've got some good ideas, but that's not one of them. Please don't do that. I went back to Buster, and I said, well, I got bad news. Smartest man I know told me we were crazy. Buster's standing around looking at the bunker, and he got two phones, a fax machine, and two folding chairs, and his junk, he lived there, and his junk all around the room. I said, he said there's going to be lawsuits and people are going to be sued. And he looked around and says, David, what the hell are they going to get, shit and tennis shoes?
That's one good way of looking at it.
And I said, well, let's try. And you know what? We haven't missed a beat. And we have carried FMCSA's water on drug and alcohol testing for 33 years. We've done more good in that area than any other one company in America.
And, yes, you have.
And we help small 1, 2, 5 truck companies, 10 truck companies, less than 100 truck companies do it right. We do it exactly right, and we do everything for them. And we've got over 4,000, maybe 4,500 people on our drug and alcohol testing program now, and we don't have. I don't think we have a single one that's over the limbo bar on that basic in CSA.
Well, I think both of us have a track record of taking things that people say can't be done in this industry and doing it, and lots of people benefiting from it. So I'm really excited that you and I are going to take on another task that they'll probably tell us we can't do. I'm more confident about this one than any I've ever been a part of in the past. So you and I are going to be talking a lot more about this. We've got some pretty big announcements coming up here pretty soon. Can't let too much out right now. What do you say we wrap this up today by taking a call from somebody that wants to talk about their numbers?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Let's go to Nevada. Don, welcome.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you today?
Hey, Don, you got lucky. You get a two for today. You get David and I.
Oh,
hey, Don.
Morning, David. How are you?
I'm good, man.
My idea was, since we heard from Dale yesterday and Matt last week on numbers for owner-operators with their own authority, I said, let's throw out some lease to Landstar numbers.
Excellent. Love to do that.
So we can, because I know that's a big part of your tribe here, and, let's it's not all bad like everybody thought, as you can see.
Exactly.
Listen, we're reading the same mail. I would like to, Kevin, who would you talk to at Landstar about the impact? You know that the Biden administration rolled back Trump's safe haven on AB5.
I know.
Last week. Now, that hasn't, I don't think that's hit everybody's, we're too busy trying to put out the forest fires to come up with what they're doing in Washington. But that's a biggie. And I'd like to know what Landstar is doing about that, because of all the people out there, Landstar, it seems like to me, would be impacted more with that than anybody else.
They will, because of their size. You know, there's two carriers I've been involved with for years and years that are kind of unique in this. Landstar is one of them, but I would say that Landstar is in the best position of all to make this transition, and here's why. I have said this for years. I've said if you want to practice run at having your own authority without all the risk, go lease to Landstar for a year. Because it's as close as you're ever going to get to having your own authority without having your own authority. They let you run the business like it's totally yours. They just handle all that back office stuff, and it's a really good model. Here's what I see Landstar doing. If the government pulls the trigger on the PRO Act, Landstar is going to have people get up from their Landstar trucking desk and walk over to their Landstar brokerage desk, and all of their BCOs will go get authority, and nothing will change. They'll move the same through the same people. It'll just be a paperwork shuffle for Landstar, is all it looks like to me. And I would say that Landstar's BCOs are ideal for this, because I've always looked at them as a step above. It's a little harder to work under their model. You got to be a little more self-sufficient. And so I think Landstar, like you and I, we've kind of been preparing for this for a long time. Landstar's model, almost, this isn't a huge problem for them the way I see it.
I agree. I think they'll thrive under it. Matter of fact, they were the first ones to come to the table. They were the first ones to come to the table and tell their capacity owners, if you're domiciled in California, go get your own authority, because we can't keep you in our group unless you got your own authority. They did that a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and like I say, I think they're in a better position than anybody to make that transition. Their infrastructure is already built for it. Their BCOs are more used to that, you know, closer to that model. So I think it's a fairly easy transition for them.
And I can't wait to make this I've been making this case now on their behalf for about 25 years now, 23 years anyhow. I did a study when CSA came out, 13 years ago, and I got everybody's safety numbers, fatalities, crashes, that kind of number.
Right.
And I rated the top 36 full truckload long-haul carriers, and the third safest was Landstar. And they were they were three times, their numbers were three times healthier than some of the big names that we've mentioned already in this conversation. Three times. My algorithm, they were 3.8. It's like golf. The lower the number, the better. They were 3.8. And, I'll just tell you, the worst one on my little deal was right here in Nashville, and they were 21 point something. So Landstar, six times safer according to the safety numbers than that particular company in Nashville, which was the most unsafe trucking company of the large 36 in full truckload in 2010.
I believe that completely. I've been a big fan of Landstar's model for a long, long time. You know, I could almost make the comparison that Landstar in a lot of ways did what you and I are talking about doing now, that they kind of created a almost a franchise model in trucking and said, if you come over here and you're willing to put in some hard work, we've got a good system. And it's worked really well. So we're really going to do that same thing on a much bigger scale. And I believe we are absolutely going to see all the same benefits. We're going to see remarkable one-truck companies who have fantastic safety ratings. They have great profit margins. And it's just going to be good for the industry.
I'm excited about it. We're going to quit talking about it here in about 30 days and actually start gathering numbers and leveraging the idea in more ways than one. I'm speaking at a conference in Houston, a bunch of insurance people, and I think I had 40 or 50 small trucking companies, and they've invited me to come down there, and that's going to be one of our big topics. You know why Landstar is, the thing that I like about Landstar, couple of things. They don't own any equipment.
Right.
And guess why they've been able to operate as efficiently and as effectively? I mean, you don't think they're doing well, check their stock history out. It's gone from mid-20s to almost $200 a share. But they eliminated the most expensive man in the equation.
Yes.
Called a dispatcher.
That's right. Exactly.
How many dispatchers does Knight Swift have?
Oh, I can't even imagine.
300, 400, 500? I don't know.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot.
Well, that's the most expensive man in a trucking company, I think.
Sure is. Yeah, when you look at it, it sure is. And Landstar had a great
Landstar
model.
They don't have any dispatchers. The driver dispatches himself.
Yep.
And they were 25 years ahead of themselves, and I think they're going to dominate that marketplace for a long, long time.
You and I could do this all day long. We do sometimes, but we do have to move along. We got another show coming up. We do have a lot of stuff we're going to be talking about soon. I'm going to be on your podcast again. We'll be talking about this a lot. One other little interesting piece on Landstar. My father's last job as a union driver before he bought his last truck and retired as an owner-operator was with Spectre. At the time, Spectre was the fifth largest trucking company in the United States. And when Spectre went out of business, it was several executives from Spectre that went and started Landstar.
And one of them had a computer system that they all hooked up in. And,
that's right.
I'm not sure which one it was. There was a guy from Roadway, and there was a guy from Mercer. And
right.
There were several companies involved in that. And one of them had, and they all had different computer systems. So they had, one of the first decisions they had to make was whose computer system are going to wait? And they made the right choice, thank God, because they were way, way, way ahead of the game 30 years ago. Guy by the name of Crow was the CEO.
Yeah, Jeff Crow, wasn't it?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, yep, I remember that. All right, David, good stuff. I wish we had more time today, but this is one of our short days, so we'll be doing this again real soon, and we've got a lot of exciting stuff coming up.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me on.
Hey, real quick, because I can't keep track of my own schedule, when am I supposed to be on your podcast? When are we doing that?
At 2:30 today.
Okay.
I think I got forgotten. They went off in the weeds.
All right. All right, we are going to wrap this up. David, again, thanks for joining us. We'll be doing this again real soon.
Okay, Kevin. You take care.
You too. Take care. All right. We are going to turn this over to Rolling Toe right now. And we're just going to continue on with this show, so we don't even need to we don't need to close this out. All I'm going to do is play the music again just so we kind of have a starting point, and I'm going to turn this over to the Becketts for Rolling Toe. Remember, this is a call-in radio show, and we do depend on calls. So start dialing if you have any kind of tire alignment, handling-related questions, vibrations. They love vibration calls. Pick up the phone and join them. In fact, do it right now, 319-527-6791, or hit the call now button on your app. Jump in and give them some calls to work with. All right. We will see you back here tomorrow for Trucking Technology and Efficiency. The Becketts are up with Rolling Toe right now. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.
Money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Okay, I believe I am here. This is Kevin Becketts with Rolling Toe, and I believe Mike is there.
I'm here.
In his recovery, what would you call that, a hospice or something?
Yes, hospice. Definitely hospice.
Mike is in hospice. And we're finally here back on the radio again, Blog Talk Radio again, for the second time this year. What is today? The 18th of January, 2024, and we're very excited to be here taking over for Kevin Rutherford on his Trucking Business and Beyond show with our switch gears, slow down, get the most out of your tires, Rolling Toe show. So Mike is there. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Okay, good. I can hear you. We're all fine.
Well, that's good, too. So we've got two good things going on at once. He's just thrilled now.
Yeah, I'm doing good here. I'm laying in bed with my foot up because I broke my foot 2 weeks ago. My ankle, I guess.
Yes.
And the mortuary has come by twice to see if I'm ready, but I'm not.
Up for an extra large casket?
No. It's going to be cremation. Small ashes.
Small ashes. We're not that small.
Yeah.
So this is I believe we counted the third good fall you've taken in the last year and a half.
Yes. I've done real well the last year and a half.
You've developed yourself into a fall risk.
Yeah. Dottie's talking about strapping me in a chair and pushing me around from that.
Right. Safer still would be that thing from Silence of the Lambs where they just put you on a little cart and strap you to it. And
I think that's what she had in mind, yeah.
I bet it is.
Yes.
Especially the mouth guard. Because
right.
You can get a little vicious when you haven't had your cookies.
Yep, I need my cookies.
Right. All right, so... Let's see. Now, that means basically you don't have a lot of input on new and fascinating things that have been going on because all you've seen is the ceiling of your bedroom for basically 2 weeks.
It's been 2 weeks since I fell down and broke my ankle. It's been a week since they operated and patched it back together. And I've got two more weeks that I'm not allowed to put any weight on that foot at all. So I'm hobbling around on one foot.
Right. So you're full of new and fascinating information. Have you been reading dirty jokes?
No.
No. Have you been reading news articles about the industry?
I kind of saw a couple of things, but I really wasn't interested while I was on the opioids.
So you're really, really helping me out here, Mike. I haven't, yeah. I've been busier than a one-armed paper hanger. Anybody who has to drive around the country might know Iowa had to shut down for a while. But I wasn't here. I had to go to Minneapolis and train up there. And below me, to the south of me, it got colder and snowed over and froze. And I got stuck there for a little bit. So I had to do the training. I had to come back and start taking care of all the training here. It's been a busy-ish kind of couple of weeks.
And that's
especially carting your butt around the house and in and out and as you had to go. You've got a number of things now. You've got crutches. They gave you crutches at the hospital.
No, they
you
didn't
got a
give
walk.
Them. They sold them to me.
They sold them. Yeah, they didn't give anything away, did they?
Right.
And then there was a walker around that we were able to get to you. And you found
right.
The most effective thing so far has been an office chair.
Yeah, I got an office chair with arms on it, and I sit in it, and I can push myself around the house with it. Since we don't have any stairs in the house, it's a ranch style.
Unless Dottie gets really mad.
Well, then she drags me back to my room, pushes it in the room, closes the door, and doesn't let me out.
Well, that's got to be a good feeling.
And then somebody gave me a scooter that you kind of kneel on, you know, but the doctor said I can't use that yet.
Nope. That's advanced. Too advanced for the likes of you.
Yeah,
right.
Well, I have to get healed up to a certain point before he wants all that vibration coming up through my legs. Yeah.
Right. All but the crutches have some wheels on them that...
No, we took the wheels off the walker.
Took the wheels off the walker. Ah,
yeah, it was too unstable with the wheels on.
Well, is that because it was too far towed in, too much caster, negative caster? What are we?
We had too much power. My one foot was pushing too hard.
Too much power. All right, it was overloaded too.
Yeah, that too, definitely.
Okay, so that's been your exciting life, and it's turned into nothing about alignment at all.
Once in a while. You know,
oh,
but
good.
That's still big.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were still able to get the tech calls. I believe, I think over the weekend, a mistake was made, and the tech calls were going straight to the voicemail for a little while, and that's disappointing.
That's something.
Yeah. But, all right, so let's see. I think with this Blog Talk Radio thing, I can have more than two callers on, and basically I'm a caller now, basically.
Let's find out.
And you're a caller. And there's another caller from the 504 area code that we're going to pull in right now. Are you there?
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, wherever y'all might be at.
For us. How's everything there?
Well, I'm in Florida, so it's nice and warm down here.
Lucky. That's like the one place that is warm.
Yeah, but I was in Nebraska the other day. It was negative 24, so I felt the impact of it. Yeah.
You paid your dues.
Yes, I did. Yes. Glad to be south, but I'm about to head right back up to Iowa. So. Yeah.
All right.
I got a question about a steer. About 6-7 months ago, I took my truck over to up there in Kansas City, and I went and seen a guy, Chad.
Yes.
Yep.
In Kansas City. Yeah, and he did a 3-axle alignment on my truck. I have a T680 2020 Kentwerk, and he did a 3-axle alignment on it. The drives are wearing pretty good. But the steer, the driver's side is wearing good, but the passenger side, on the outside edge, I'm starting to get some dips. On that outside edge. And now I got about 75, 80,000 miles on these steer tires. When he did the 3X alignment, I bought the steer tires right after he did the alignment.
Mm-hmm. All right. What So wait, just to clarify one more time, how many miles are on the truck?
On the tires.
On the tires, about 75, 80, 80,000, somewhere in there.
Right, but the truck, how many miles on the truck?
On the truck, I have, let me see, I got 431,000.
Okay. All right, and the cupping is only on the right side, on the outside?
Yeah, it's on the side.
Okay, yep. You've got what we refer to as 55-degree wheel cut wear. It's aligned properly. We're sure of that because Chad did it. He's a very conscientious guy. But the steering system is designed, in the case of your truck, to turn really sharp compared to trucks of years gone by.
Right.
So as you turn way out to the right, the steering arm and the Ackerman arm, the tie rod and the Ackerman arm, become a straight line. And it allows the wheel end to have a significant amount of freedom of movement because it's no longer held tight, especially when you're backing up. So it's turning all the way up, out on its edge, and you're backing up and it's got negative caster, and the whole assembly is sort of scuffing around as you back up, which is causing this little bit of scalloping right there all the way on the outside edge of the tire. So the way to stop that is, well, there's a few different ways. One, you can extend your steering stop on the spindle to meet the axle a little sooner so it doesn't quite turn as far. Or
you're talking about the little screw, how to get the little screw right there. You can tighten up on it and back up on it.
Yes. It's a square-headed bolt. Right.
You
may have to get a new bolt, but don't put a hex head bolt on it. You got to keep a square-headed bolt on it because the hex head bolt won't meet the embossment properly and it'll bend the bolt. So make sure that's right. Or in another case, you could tie a string to the spoke on your steering wheel and the other side to the column and stop yourself from turning more than two turns at a time.
Okay.
And it might get in the way sometimes. You want to make sure it doesn't hang up on your windshield wipers. But
now, see, I don't like the string deal.
You don't?
I prefer a bungee strap so that when you get out there far enough, it just snaps it back to straight.
Exactly. It adds. It's just like adding more caster.
So the question is, right back the other way.
So when I'm turning to the right, how many times it should turn? Just one and a half turns?
No more than two.
That's too much.
Well, it's hard to say because depending on the steering gearbox you got, it used to be that two full turns was about 20 degrees per turn. But it could be 25 degrees per turn now, so it might be 50 degrees at two turns. So just count how far does it turn. If it turns two and a half times, you want to back it off to two times. If it only turns two times now, it's got to back off to about one and three quarter.
Right, let's see. Okay. All right. Yeah, so I'll put another steer tire on that side and back off it. And well, once I get parked, I'll see how far it turns, and then I'll adjust that screw then.
Yep.
But all right, that's all I had, guys. I appreciate it. Enjoy the show.
No problem.
Y'all take care now.
Thank you for calling. All right. Bye-bye. All right. I think I can – I touched the little orange X on that one. I hope I didn't erase him from the universe or anything, but at least he's not in my studio anymore.
All right.
And we do actually have two more callers on, and Kevin was nice enough to give the phone number out for the guest call-ins, which is 319-527-6791. And as we know, I think Mike knows this because I think he went in on the app.
So, yes, I did.
Yes, if you're listening live on the app, I don't actually know how many other ways there are to listen. But if you're listening live on the app, then you can just, what did you have to do? Push a button?
Yeah, just push the button. But you had to stand on your head when you did it.
I don't know how it knows you do that, but
it
sounds dangerous if you're driving, but it's Kevin's deal. I don't run that.
Right.
So All right, we got two more calls hanging on the line, and I heard Shanna was going to be calling in here sometime soon with some important updates, but maybe she's in soon. Anyway, the next one is 402, which I think we both know where that is. That's Southern Florida.
Okay.
or Nebraska. Could be Nebraska.
Could be.
Could be. Okay, hey, you're on the air.
That's me?
That is you.
It must be you.
Okay. Okay. I want to talk to you guys about a front axle. I was thinking about, I've got a Cascadia 19, and I was thinking about putting the new Air Ride front axle underneath of it. It's got the Detroit axle. What
okay.
do you guys think of that?
Well, you're talking about when you say a new Air Ride axle, what do you mean? The Hendrickson hollow tube
yep.
axle? Or?
Okay. Yeah, but it's the airbags are behind the
yes.
the axle, not on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's it. I have nothing against that design personally. It seems to perform pretty well for the people that have it. They all seem rather happy with it as long as the vehicle is properly aligned. I don't have any problems with it. If that's what you want, go ahead.
Well, they say that if I just change my caster. Now, you guys say there's a way to check your caster.
Well, yeah. Not on that.
It's very complicated, though. You have to buy some expensive tools to do this with, okay?
You do.
Do you have a smartphone?
Yes, I do, unfortunately.
And an Amazon account.
No, I don't have an Amazon.
Okay. Well, the smartphone is the most expensive tool you have to buy.
Okay.
Because in the smartphone, it should have a digital level.
It
okay?
does, yeah.
Well,
okay.
Some come out without that app, but you can go in the App Store and get a free digital level in your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So you set the phone
okay.
on the frame of the truck by the engine, and you find out if the frame is aimed downhill at the front or uphill at the front, how many degrees it is. Now, let's say that it's at zero, just because it's easy to figure that way. Then you take the digital level and you set it on the axle next to the U-bolts. The difference between the frame and the axle is the caster that's in the axle.
Okay.
You would like it to be somewhere between 2 and 3 degrees. Now, most Cascadias that we've been checking lately are up somewhere around 5 and 5.5 degrees.
This seems excessive.
And
yeah.
that makes
for
it ride worse?
Well, for each degree you take out of the front axle, you reduce the rough ride by 10%.
Oh.
Right. So you can have even smoother ride with your airbags by lowering the caster a bit down to, say, 3 degrees. High caster
yeah.
is very important for situations like, you know, high-speed racing, motorcycles, that kind of thing. Not
okay.
as important for trucks. You better not be treating this thing like a race car.
Right. Now.
Okay.
On most Freightliner Cascadias, if you look on top of the axle, there is a riser block and then the leaf springs. And between the riser
yeah.
block and the axle, there's often tapered wedges, thin on the front and thick on the back. If you take
okay.
all of the wedges out of both sides on the front end of a Cascadia and set the thing down flat, normally you're at 3 degrees.
Right. And no more split in caster between the two sides, which is bad for your ride also.
Yeah, you don't want different wedges on both sides, okay? Everything
right.
should be smooth and even, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Now, if you happen to have a couple of 1 degree wedges,
mm-hmm.
you could put them between the riser block and the axle with a thick side to the front, and when you set it down, you should be at about 2 degrees.
Right. Right,
yeah.
So this would all be things you can do without changing your axle. Just get rid
okay.
of all those wedges that are in your truck right now and see how smooth the ride is. Maybe you don't need to spend all the money on the axle.
Right.
Now, the next
right.
problem I have with the Air Ride is as you go down the road and you hit a bump in the road and the air spring compresses to take the shock out, the axle gets closer to the frame of the truck, right?
Right.
So the drag link angle coming from the steering gearbox back to the axle kind of flattens out to turn your steer tires one way or the other. And so guys complain on air ride suspensions that the thing seems to float back and forth like driving a boat.
I had a Coronado with the air ride on the front, and I had no problem with it. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Good. And if you do the curve and you find you like the way it handles, great, but oftentimes we find people when they switch it, they find that they don't like this boat steering concept, okay?
Right.
Okay.
Before you spend the money on the conversion, see if you can get the caster down around 2 degrees and see if that satisfies you.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I will look at that. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. So. All righty.
Well,
right. I appreciate you guys' time. Thanks.
No problem. Thanks for calling in.
You bet. Bye.
Right. Okay, so that's a everything changed. Okay. I have at least two, maybe three more calls in here, and the next one here is the 309 area code, so we'll just go right straight to the next caller here. Hello.
Well, that must be me. 309,
yep,
I guess that's me.
Yep.
You got it, gentlemen. You folks have to know that I'm kind of special because on my app, my call-in button is chromed.
Chrome.
It's chromed.
That's
so I'm special.
That's
took
very
extra
nice.
Money to get that. Well, it took a lot of extra money to get that pulled off, but it's done there. So, and then I have one. I did. I got one quick story for Mike before I get to my question, Mike, about probably 20 years ago. When my youngest son was in the first grade and I was over the road driving, I'd call home and talk to him every day. And he told me one day when I called him, he said, "Dad," said, "one of the kids in my class fell and hurt his leg. And he had to go to the doctor." He said, "Dad, when he came back from the doctor, he had two crotches."
Mm-hmm.
Two crotches.
Two crotches. So,
yeah, well, I came home with three crotches.
Yeah, there you go. So, I just thought I always say any time I hear somebody getting injured, they might be on crutches. I think of that story about crotches.
That's a good story.
All right, here's my question. I've run Michelin steer tires for years and years and years and consistently get a quarter million miles out of them, 250 to 260 plus thousand miles out of them. However, this last set wore out prematurely. However, I don't know whether it was on one side or the other because I rotated them, and so I kind of had both of them kind of wore out prematurely. So I replaced them, when I say prematurely, about half the mileage. So then I replaced them, and another set I had not rotated wore out on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is solid on the truck. There's no problems. I always have them balanced. I run the centering pins on the drums. I run the centermatics balancing rings, and then I have them spun balance, which also their high-dollar spin balance machine checks the radial runout and the balance, and so they were all balanced, and they still wore out prematurely. I think
okay,
I know what my problem
wait,
is,
wait,
but
wait,
I'll...
Wait,
okay.
Wait.
All right.
You wore out the left front tire. Did you wear out the tire evenly smooth all the way across, or did you wear out
no.
the outside shoulder or the inside shoulder,
out
or what?
I wore out the inside shoulder about halfway around, and I could feel a lot of shimmying and bouncing in the steering wheel. So
okay,
I knew
okay,
it was
okay,
in the steering
wait,
wheel.
Wait. Now,
okay.
Before you took the tire off and you could see the wear, did you slide your hand back and forth across the tire to see if there was any feathered wear?
I did, and I couldn't tell any, but then my old calloused hands, I wasn't sure whether I was feeling anything or not. I didn't feel anything at all. But
okay,
once I got it off.
How long has it been since you've had an alignment?
Quite some time.
Okay.
How does it drive?
Perfect. Now, but here's I wonder if this isn't my problem, and I want to get confirmation on it. The balance ring on the left-hand side, the centermatic balance ring, does not sound right when you rotate it.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of them going bad and causing that kind of problem?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, anything can happen. How old are they?
They were the ones that Noah used to line his ark.
Yeah. The oil, if it comes, if there's an oil bath that all these beads sit in, and if the oil leaks out of it, then you're just stuck with beads that will end up binding up. The other question or issue I have now, a centromatic doesn't sit on the inside edge. It sits kind of in the middle or even further toward the dish side. So if it's out of balance, I would expect to see wear across the tire, not just on the inside edge, and especially not just halfway around. Go ahead, Mike.
The halfway around doesn't bother me.
Okay.
If the beads are all locked in one spot, it's going to cut 90 degrees away from, or 180 degrees away from that.
Wherever
it is. And
then it's
marching, and it'll go about halfway around. So that doesn't surprise me at all. When you rotated the tires,
mm-hmm.
you took rim and all and moved it to the right side and took the right rim and all and put it to the left side, correct?
Correct.
When the right front tire got put on the left side and it started wearing bad, did it start wearing with the same pattern?
Yes.
Okay. So there's two possibilities. Because you think the sound of that left front Centromatic doesn't sound right, it's possible the Centromatic has gone bad. They have, a five-year warranty on them.
Right.
So it's possible that it's gone bad and the weights are stuck. The simple test for that is to take the wheel off, take the Centromatics off, and hold it like a steering wheel in your hand and turn it 180 degrees left and 180 degrees right, and you should be hearing the beads move back and forth in it. If you don't hear them moving, it's junk. Okay?
Okay.
It's just extra weight.
I left it off. This time when I put the new set on like a week ago, I left them off. So
okay.
I guess it was kind of – I just never heard of them going bad, so I was just kind of wanting confirmation that that's a possibility.
Right.
It's a very good possibility if they're Noah's Ark originals. Okay?
Right.
Yes.
So – if you've left them off, they're sitting in your garage at home, right?
Well, they're sitting out in the snowbank right now.
Okay, well, if you find them in the snowbank and dig them out and hold them up and twist them, you should be able to hear if the beads are moving or not.
Right.
Well, I did, and they didn't sound right. I mean, they don't sound, they seem like they go a certain distance and then stop, and you keep rotating, and they're not rotating, and so that's why I left them off. They just didn't sound right.
Yeah,
that sounds like it's what your problem is. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted confirmation on it, and I knew wanted you to assure me I did the right thing by leaving them off this time.
I
and I don't. I mean, it drives fine, and there's no completely eliminated that shake and shimmy in the steering wheel. But I guess it's a situation where they've been new too long.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now I got one other thing. You say the Centromatics are as old as Noah's Ark. What about the wheels?
Well, see, Kevin, I eliminated the wheels.
I know you
because
did. I know.
The right front wasn't doing it, and when he moved it over to the left front, it did it again.
That's
but
all
had
true.
It. Had the right front wheel.
That's all true. There's good reason to suspect that your wheels are fine. However, how old are they?
2.7 to 8 million miles.
2.7 million miles old wheels.
Are they original wheels on the truck? But they've
are
always
they
balanced correctly.
Are they 24.5s?
No, 22.5.
22.5s.
But they've always balanced correctly. I mean, they've always – I always figured if I had a bad wheel, it wouldn't balance right?
No. The wheel can be worn.
Right,
the
many
rubber,
ways.
Yeah, the rubber moves against the wheel every time it goes through the footprint, and that movement of the rubber against the aluminum wheel causes the wheel to wear. And the form of the rim is not the same now as it was when it was brand new.
Right. A typical wheel lasts about how long, an aluminum rim?
About a million, million and a half.
Million. You're about double the typical life.
Yeah.
That you've been able to get this this good of wear out of it, that it hasn't completely failed, is great. But the aluminum wasn't supposed to put up with this much abuse, this long of a life. So I would really suggest getting new rims on top of a new Centromatic.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I always just assumed so long as they balanced all right, they were okay, you know, no cracks, no nothing in them. So
there's other tests you can do. You want to see that where the bead meets is nice and round, and I'm sure it's not anymore. It's probably a nice square, sharp edge anymore. But then second, if you put the wheel on the ground after you've taken the tire off of it and roll it, if it doesn't roll straight, if it wobbles, or if it rolls toward the bell side, you got a bad rim also.
How in the hell is that going to roll down my gravel driveway, Kevin?
Well, try it in the shop.
Oh, in the shop on cement floor. Okay, all right. I got it. All right. Well, I will probably give serious consideration to new rims next time I get new tires in. That's good advice. I hadn't even thought of it. I just assumed so long as this rim was balancing on their machine and it wasn't showing any outer round way, everything was okay. So,
It's pretty good. It's damn good for the life it got.
Well, that's because I'm a good driver.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's right.
All right.
I
got
another question then. How many miles are on your front leaf springs?
As many. I replaced them, I don't know, they probably a million, though, probably.
Yeah.
Okay, well, when the ride doesn't feel like it ought to be anymore, then you ought to think about some springs.
How do we know that it isn't the way it ought to be? Because I'm sure after a million miles, you've gotten used to the action they have.
Right.
What's good action and what's bad action?
Beats the hell out of me. My wife is pretty good.
And if you run across I-40 and if you run across I-40 west of Kingman, Arizona, there's no ride in the world. I don't care if it's a brand new truck. You're not going to get a decent ride. So
well, that's true.
Holy shit, them roads bad, but whatever. All right, fellas, appreciate
all right,
it.
Buddy. Drive safe.
Thank you. You bet. Bye.
All right, bye. Okay. Let's see. Now, I'm pretty darn sure I know who the next caller is, so I guess we'll get right to her. This is probably Shauna Gray with S&B Transportation.
Of course. Of course it
Hello.
Is. You missed me, right?
We did.
Yes.
We did. Well, I just want to know, is Russell as versed as Frank after my hubby was there yesterday, and I guess Kevin got to chase Frank around for 15 minutes because he got out the door?
Right.
Russell got out the door last night, too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, is that how your ankle broke?
No.
No.
Similar, though.
Do you want
it was on
story?
A walk with Russell.
I can give you the short version or the long version. Which one do you want?
Almost everything's long with you, isn't it?
Yes. But I do have a short version, and the short version is stupidity.
Stupidity.
Okay. We get a lot of that.
Right.
Oh, go ahead.
I was walking the dog on a retractable leash. He likes to go left and right and sniff and having a great time. We're walking around our pond, and he went the wrong way around a tree. And I couldn't get him to come back. So I said, well, I'll go around the tree. So I stepped off the path onto some grass. It had ice on it. I didn't know that. My left foot shot out. I sat on my right foot, and then it was all yelling, screaming, and cussing.
Yeah.
Oh. Well,
there
hopefully you have a quick recovery.
Yes.
Well,
we hope.
In 4 weeks. 4 weeks with no weight on it, and then 4 weeks with gradually increasing weight and physical therapy.
And you're hoping that Dottie just waits on you hand and foot for the next 8 weeks.
Well, she's managed so far, but she's seriously considering me treating like they do a horse when they break their leg.
Right.
Nope. Well, I just wanted to say thank you for helping us out when Brian came down to Des Moines to his store and you guys got to hook us up, and we really appreciate it. It's still snowing here, and I wish this all would go to Jim because we have had enough. So.
Jim's got a snowmobile, and he wants to use it. So
yeah, and I've got a boat that I'd like to use in the 80-degree weather. So
right.
There you go.
All right. Well, you guys have fabulous. Just been great having Jason with us now, and we're doing a lot of total suspension repairs that take a few days, not just a quick alignment here and there. But, of course, we're keeping busy, and it's been great. So
it always works better if you fix them first.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Stay warm.
Yep.
Thank
good
you.
Luck out there.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Bye. And that was Shauna with S&B Transportation out of Brandon, South Dakota. So if you happen to be driving through South Dakota and you need some work done, that's the place to go. All right, and we do have one more caller on the line here. And how many minutes? We've got plenty of time left. One more caller. We'll go ahead and take care of him and then get to maybe some other business. Hello, 858.
Hello. Just drove through Nebraska and then to Kansas and then to Rocky Mountains, all that,
uh-huh.
And just got out of the snow. So I'm driving really nice in Nevada right now. Beautiful, clear day. Okay. So anyways, I got two questions. So, you know, when I go up the mountain in Nevada, And then when I go downhill, I like to just put it on neutral and let it coast.
Mm-hmm.
And then the vibration goes off. It's smooth. So
mm-hmm.
What does that mean? When it's smooth and the vibration on the floor of my truck, it stops when I'm off gear.
When you let off the gas, then it's smooth.
Yeah.
But when you put gas on it, it vibrates.
No. When I shift it into neutral, and I'm just coasting down the mountain.
Clutch. I see.
Uh-huh. I push in the clutch, and then I just coast down in neutral, and then it rides smoothly. So the vibration is, you know, minor vibration when I'm in gear. What does that mean?
Right.
It means that there's vibration emanating from either the front half of your transmission, your clutch, or from the engine. Okay. So the question I've got is, how many miles are on your vehicle?
930.
Okay.
Have you ever replaced the counterbalance on the front of your engine?
Oh, you know, I don't think I have, no. I bought this truck at 600,000 miles.
Okay.
Well, as you torque an engine, it creates vibrations. And one of the things that stops that is the balancer on the front end of the engine. It absorbs those shocks that come through it. The second thing that it stops it are the springs in the clutch. There's some lateral springs in there that allow the friction plates to dance back and forth, and they dampen the vibrations. So what you've described to me is that when you take the torque off of the engine and let it idle, the wheels are rolling nice and free, and they're not vibrating. So it sounds like the vibration's coming from the engine.
Yep. So biggest suggestion, either the counterbalance at the front of the engine or the springs in the clutch. The counterbalance is the cheapest thing to get to because you don't have to tear anything apart.
Yeah, you don't have to remove the transmission. Might have to take the radiator out,
right.
Depending on. But I'd look at the counterbalance. And if that doesn't solve it, I'd look at the clutch.
Okay. Okay. I always thought it was going to be in the transmission. Oh. Okay. Okay. The other question is, I took it to my alignment. I took it to a shop where in Salt Lake City where you drive onto a Lazy Susan, and then they do a alignment. So, anyways, I ended up. Blowing out one tire and then got it fixed and then putting a tire on there. But anyways, it was pulling to the right. Okay, so once I did that, and then I called the alignment shop and they told me to switch the tires. The front two tires. And then when I did that, it was pulling to the left. So what does that mean?
Which means the tire got damaged and created a pull in the tire. Now, the question is, was the damage caused by the alignment being incorrect, or was the damage caused because of defect in the tire? I suspect it was because the alignment wasn't right. So I'm going to suggest that you go to a shop that's trained our way to align it and see if they find anything wrong that would be causing this pull.
Well, okay. No. I did the alignment. Okay, and then I had a blowout or a nail in the tire, and I got it fixed right there on the spot. And then I put, I think what I'm trying to say is it's pulling to the right after I did the alignment, but then the alignment shop told me to swap the tires, right? So
which
I swapped it, and now it's pulling to...
Which means the tire is damaged. The question is, how did
it's a bad tire.
Yeah.
Okay.
So put another new tire on it or put two new tires on it, whichever you want, because it's obvious the tire's got a problem.
Yes.
How do you feel about Goodyear Endurance?
I try not to endorse any particular brand of tire because over the years, one particular tire brand was really good and they had a good model. And then they changed it, and then the thing sucked. And then another one was good, and then another one was good. So every time I recommend one, the next time they build the tire, it's not what I wanted.
Yeah. Our goal is to get the most cost per mile out of any brand tire that we put on a truck. We'll try to get you the best, and they can all actually end up pretty close. I mean, a Michelin will get you in the right conditions, the longest life, but because it costs the most, it might not be the best cost per mile. If you want an Endurance, get an Endurance. If we work with us, if you put the right tire pressure in it, if you balance it properly, if you get it aligned right, it's a good tire.
Okay. All right. I like the Toyos, actually. Really.
Sure.
That's fine.
That's on my other tire, on my other wheel. So.
Yeah.
But okay. All right, the balancing, like you said, was the first thing was counter. It's called, what is it again? What is it called?
Counteract.
Yes, that goes inside the tire.
Oh, no, I'm talking about, about the vibration.
The engine.
Okay.
The engine. There's a counterbalance on the front of the engine.
Counterbalancing in the front of the engine, and it's okay. Now, is that something that a regular do-it-yourself guy can do?
I don't know. I'm not an engine guy.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I wouldn't. It's kind of a Yeah.
I can't even.
Okay.
Guess.
Okay, I'll take you to the shop.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Okay.
All
right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. And for anybody listening, Kevin Rutherford throws in a better technical term would be a crankshaft dampener. Crankshaft dampener. All right. The counterbalance on the front of the engine is the crankshaft dampener. All right. Which means he's listening, which I'm really impressed with. Sometimes I just have no idea if Kevin actually hears what we do. Or if he just turns off his ears, goes, has a snack, some coffee, and relaxes while we do our silly tricks and noises.
But we're having fun.
Yeah. Another note I want to just give to anybody. If you're wondering if your alignment is right, after you've gotten an alignment, if you have good tires on the truck, when you're driving at 60 miles an hour on a highway in the right-hand lane on a nice flat, straight stretch of road,
without a
be able to. What's that?
Without a crosswind.
Without crosswind, no wind, and rolling down the highway, you should be able, from the center of the right lane, you should be able to let go of the steering wheel, and it should take more than 2 seconds before the right tire finally reaches the white line on the right side. If it's taking 1, 2, and it's there, you know what? That's actually a pretty good alignment. The rear end is keeping you against the crown of the road properly. But if it's not doing that, then there's more work to do. And if you got it aligned and maybe 30, 40,000 miles later, it starts doing that, well, now you got questions about what exactly happened because an alignment should hold for hundreds of thousands of miles. All right.
Something bends, breaks, or wears up.
Right. All right. We got one more caller here, the 320 area code. So let's hear from him and see if he's got another great question about tires or vibrations or anything else.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
First of all, I got a shout out to Marcus up in Wisconsin. He left my truck 8 months ago, and I think he did a fabulous job.
That's good to hear. That's great to hear. And that's two people. Now, is this Marcus, just to make sure? No. All right. So that's two people that we've heard from today that had somebody that did a great job using our equipment to align their vehicles. Chad Hone down in Kansas City and Marcus up in with Mobile Alignments Wisconsin.
Cool.
And you got anything? Is there anything else? Can you tell us any more about it? How long did you go before you were able to get to one of our shops as a driver?
Right before he aligned it, I had drive axle bushings put in, and they did it on a Hunter machine, and it was $270 for the waste of money, but
just aggravating.
See here, it is, but from Minnesota, Wisconsin, it's about 500 miles, and I don't know if I would have wrecked the tires or not, so.
Nah.
I just had the shop after they did the bushings just somewhat align it.
Right. How long have you been driving all together?
Oh, I've 15 years.
And was this the first time you were able to get to one of our shops, or do you usually go to somebody else?
The last guys did was Royal Tire and Wake Park.
Yeah, they don't exist anymore. Now it's Pumps.
Yes, that's correct.
A good group of people there really liked working with Royal Tire. There are these great people around the country that do alignments our way, lots of them. You can find them on a shop locator list. My problem for years has been that when you get an alignment done, really all you have to hold on to is, an invoice that you're going to file away, and the tire wear that you're going to experience, tire wear and handling. But you get that, and it's not something that you take off and take into the truck stop or the driver lounge or the trade show and show people, look at the tire wear that I got here. So I've been trying to think of a way that I can get the people that get an alignment to hold on to something that says, look, I got one of these MD alignments. And finally, I've decided I'm going to start making challenge coins for you and other customers of ours that get an alignment so that you've got, your proof. is that something you'd be interested in?
We could give it a try, yeah.
Good. So I'm going to, Marcus is going to start getting those things, and I'll have to have his boss help us out with that. And the same with everybody else around the country. I want everybody to be able to have this to show people, no, these are the guys that did it, and it's going to have the company that did it and us on the other side of the coin. There'll be an update on it on the Facebook and on our website, and we're going to have them at the Mid-America Truck Show, and that'll be the next big thing.
Okay, that's
anyway.
All very nice, but did you have a question for us?
Yes.
I did. I think I remember you guys
it?
Telling. There's lots of questions on my mind. I think you said the left steer tire wears out faster than the right one, correct?
If it's aligned our way and there's nothing else in the factors on a line haul truck, the left front tire will wear 1 to 2/32 seconds faster than the right front tire. So normally at about 70 or 80,000 miles, it'll be 2/32 seconds more worn on the left front, and it's time to rotate the tire so they'll even back out again.
So 1 to 2/32 seconds for every 10/32 seconds about. Or
all
for
right,
every 8/32 seconds.
Why is that, though?
Because we're aiming the drive axles slightly to the left. We're coning them to push the truck a little left to counter the crown of the road. And so there's more push on the left front tire than there is the right front.
That makes sense.
But it's wearing nice and smooth, and you're getting the most life out of it that you could have.
And you're getting the right handling.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
The last time I changed steer tires, the one's got 40,000 miles more than the other one, and it's about time to replace that one. Should I put that on the right side or the left side?
It doesn't really matter to begin with.
Yeah, that 40,000 miles, there might be 2/32 seconds difference between them now. I suppose at that point, if you put that one that's already 2/32 seconds worn on the right side and a new one on the left side, then you've done yourself a favor, yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, buddy.
I'll do that then.
All right.
Thanks for calling. Have a great day.
Yep, you too.
You too.
Yes.
Thank you.
Bye.
Right.
All right. Come on, drop. Okay, there it went. Okay, so that was the last caller that was in. It is afternoon. I realize I started late. I had some technical difficulties, all mostly on my side this time. That's where we're at. I think we've done a show now. I have a bunch of other stuff I have to get to, and you have to hurry up and rest.
I got to put my foot back up.
You have to put your foot back and rest. Yes, that'll be good. I think we're going to call that a show. We'll have more news and more things to talk about next week. Hopefully, we'll just throw some magazines at you, and maybe you'll read those and come up with some news or jokes or something else for the next show.
The news. That'll be my segment.
Exactly. Okay, I'm happy with it. I guess that'll be, I don't know if I'm going to end the episode or if Kevin is, now that I know he's listening.
I don't know, but I'm going to hang up. Bye.
You're going to hang up. And I will talk to you, probably later today.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Mike. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And I look forward to coming back here next week at the same time and the same channel. All right. Thank you very much, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. And now I can't push the button because Mike put it in the way.